I'm Ken MacLeod. From the day we launched unfetteredmind.org, it has operated without a paywall, advertising, or a subscription charge. This is only possible through the generosity of people like you. If you find our materials useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind, Chö, and Opening to Experience.
This represents, or is, our first full day of retreat. It's very good to be here. The very, very clear from the sense of in the meditation hall here, and also in the interviews, that everybody comes to this retreat with a pretty clear and pretty strong intention. And that makes for a good practice environment. There are a number of different themes that have emerged through the interviews. I just want to touch on two of them briefly, because they're both quite important. The first, and this has a little bit to do with Chö as well, Dharma practice, Buddhist practice, is not really about trying to make things better. It's about developing the capacity to experience things just as they are. Some time ago, I came across a quotation, one of these little refrigerator magnets from Winston Churchill. When you're going through hell, keep going. Don't try to make it better, just keep going. And there's something really solid about that. So, whether you're working with waking up to what is ultimately true, or whether you're working with waking up to what is relatively true, whether you're working with the emphasis on emptiness, or on compassion, on everything being like a dream, or taking and sending, the fundamental intention and aim of the practice is to bring you into the experience of now, exactly what you're experiencing right now. So, in your practice, whenever you feel you're not really connected with it, move into the experience, whatever it is. Sometimes that will be pleasant, sometimes it will be unpleasant. It doesn't really matter. And that actually is what we learn by doing this over and over again. We develop a capacity which we haven't had previously to experience things which are intensely painful sometimes, and sometimes intensely pleasurable, which we weren't able to before. We just shut down in the face of it. And so we gradually cultivate the ability to experience whatever arises in life. And that's how we become present. The second point is a reiteration of what I said earlier this afternoon. When doing, taking, and sending, make sure you do both. If you only take, you'll get first become sad, then start to despair, and then sink into depression. And then you're going to curl up in a ball, and we're just going to have to wheel you out. And if you only do sending, you end up somewhat intoxicated with happiness and very, very removed from actual experience of the world. Do both, and make sure that you do both, because when you do both, the fixation on either cannot and will not hold. So you stay in the experience of what is. Here's the two points I wanted to go over. Now this evening, because this is our first full day, I'm not going to talk at great length because I think we're all a little bit tired, a little bit drained from the heat possibly. But I want to give a little bit of background to Chö. I'm just going to give a little pet peeve first. Many of you know this one. A good friend and colleague of mine, Sarah Harding, recently finished this book. And it is a translation of Matchi Glaptun's own explanation of Chö. And she's done a very solid job translating it, a very thorough job researching it, and a good job putting it all together. And you will see that it is spelled C-H-O umlaut D. Well, the D is only pronounced in a dialect in the far west of Tibet. In the rest of Tibet, the D is never pronounced, and yet everybody in the west is going chud. That's my pet peeve. It's pronounced chud. Sure. No, there's just chu. Who? Well, there's chu, but that's the word for Dharma. That's a totally different word. And that's chu, and not chu. And it's a tonal language, you see, but there are two spelling differences. One is it's chu and not chu, and the other is it's u, not u. So they're very important differences. Now, Matchi Glaptun was a woman who had a natural intelligence, and she had the good fortune to learn how to read, which was relatively rare for a woman in 12th century Tibet. And she was able to read very well. So she was regularly hired by nobility in her region to read scripture, because this is the way that you earned merit. And among the scriptures that were available to her were the Prajnaparamita, the perfection of wisdom. And because of her intelligence, not only could she read it, she could also understand it. In Tibetan, you learned how to read without understanding what you read. And there was another whole step to actually learn the meaning of the words. But she was able to do that too. So she spent hours and hours and hours reading the Prajnaparamita literature and just loved it. And on that basis, that's how her faith and inspiration for practice came about. And she had a number of teachers. Her principal teacher, Lama Sunam, relatively little is known about him. But at one point she had some dream signs, I think, or vision, that she would meet a very dark-skinned master from India. And when she went out of her house next day, this guy was there. And his name was Dampa Sangje, and he's also often called Padampa Sangje, Pa meaning father. And the interaction between the two of them is very fruitful. Padampa Sangje developed a system of practice which is known in Tibetan as Shije, which is to make peaceful. And Machik developed the system of practice which we now know today as Chö. The names for both of these practices come from the Prajnaparamita. Shije comes directly from the Heart Sutra. And if you read in the Heart Sutra, on page 13, therefore, the great mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great insight, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra which makes equal what is not equal, the mantra which completely calms all suffering. And it's that which calms, that's what Shije means, makes peaceful. And so that was where the name for Padampa Sangje's system of practice was taken. And Machik's was taken from what is popularly known as the Diamond Sutra. It became known as the Diamond Sutra because this is how it was translated from the Chinese and Japanese, which was the first contact with it. If you were translating this from the Tibetan, we wouldn't translate it as the Diamond Sutra. We translate it as the Vajra Cutter Sutra. It's the Dorje Chupa, though. And that cutter is the same as Chö, means to cut. Now, both of these systems of practice shared a common feature, which is totally consistent with what we're working with here today. But one has to remember that today we have access to a far greater range of teaching and instruction than anybody has had historically. I mean, every one of you has more access to instruction and teaching than most of the lamas who lived in Tibet. Now, you may find that hard to believe, but up until the 1950s, it was, if you were trained in Zen, that was in Japan. And that was it. If you trained in Theravadan Buddhism, you were in Burma or Laos or Sri Lanka or Thailand, and that was it. And if you trained in Tibetan Buddhism, you were in Tibet. That was it. And you knew nothing about the Theravadan tradition, and you knew nothing about the Zen tradition. And the Zen knew a little bit about the Theravadan tradition because they shared a couple of sutras, but not very much, and nothing about the Tibetan tradition, and so forth. And same with the Sri Lankan. The Sri Lankan teacher that lived in L.A. came to see Kala Rinpoche, and Dr. Ratnasara was a wily old goat. He's a real, very astute guy. And he said, oh, I want to be your teacher, Ken. Delighted. So I came out, and sitting with Rinpoche, and Dr. Ratna said, in the Theravadan tradition, and he named four of the 37 factors of enlightenment, we have these teachings. Kala Rinpoche leaned forward. Oh, do you? Well, in the Tibetan tradition, we have those four, and then right after that, we have these five. Dr. Ratna said, looked at him and said, you know this stuff? And he was genuinely surprised. He didn't realize that they share the same basic texts. This is the degree of isolation that existed up until the middle of the last century. But now in Los Angeles or in San Francisco or in New York and many other cities in this country, you have access not only to every Tibetan tradition, but to most of the Zen traditions, to all of the Theravadan traditions, and Chinese and things like that. And one really does have access to these. So the amount that we're able to enjoy this way is very, very different. In Machik's time, you lived in one village, and it was usually surrounded by mountains, and the only people who went over the mountains were the traders, because it was very perilous, and it was a very, very difficult journey. How many of you have seen the movie Himalaya? Yeah, you get an idea of what it was like. You know. It was very, very difficult to go from place to place, so you might have one set of texts, and that was it. That was all you're going to have access to. So when you think of it in these terms, what Padampa Sangjay and Machik Laptun did was to develop a different way of approaching practice. And at that point, except for some very, very secret stuff that was carried on by people like Marpa and Milarepa, the vast majority of people, monks in the monasteries and nuns in the convents, they would do refuge, and they might have a few teaching on bodhicitta, but most of the time they were studying logic and morality, and they studied that ad nauseum. And that's what their practice consisted of. They had relatively little access to other teaching. And the whole idea was to gather the to do good work by doing prostrations and confession and doing virtuous acts and so forth. So you gradually matured into some kind of awakening. And a lot of these people never got a lot of instruction in meditation itself. And what Machik and Padampa Sangjay said was, you can go right into this. Go right into the experience and discover the awakened nature of experience by experiencing what arises completely. This is what. And Padampa Sangjay's take on this was, okay, suffering comes, open to the suffering completely. And as all of you know from your own experience, when you open to the suffering completely, the suffering is calmed. Because by opening to the experience of suffering completely, remember suffering is the reaction to experience, by opening to that experience of the reaction completely, the energy that goes into the reaction goes into one's attention. So you stop reacting, you may experience pain, but you no longer suffer. And you're just right there in the experience. And this is the essential point of Padampa Sangjay's approach, which at the time was revolutionary. Machik took this a step further and said, well, not only do you do this, you actually create really challenging experiences for yourself. And then you go straight into them. And this is the Vajra Cutter quality. Don't wait for stuff to come. Make them happen. Sound familiar? So, and because Tibet was a country that was just steeped in mythology and demons and things like that, what you did was invoked this, all of these things that people were very, very afraid of. So they go off into strange places and invoke them and get themselves totally terrified and then rest right in the experience of being totally terrified. And they would cut all of the preoccupations. So whereas Shijie, or pacifying, works to pacify the reactions through attention, Chö cuts the attachment and the confusion that accompanies reaction, so you're right in the experience. The full name for Chö, how's it go? I can't remember. I don't take time digging it up in here. But basically, it's the clear-cut Mahamudra. Clear-cut is in what they do on the West Coast, you know, just chop all the trees down. Here, the forest is the forest of thoughts and emotional reactions to things. And you just cut. And then you're in space Mahamudra. That's the actual name for it in Tibetan. Now, because Chö worked very directly with Tibetan, these elements of Tibetan culture, it became very, very popular and totally misconstrued in Tibet. And I just want to read how Jamkhon Khontro opens up his commentary on, this is a short commentary. There we are. It says, this teaching, known as the clear-cut Mahamudra, belongs to the middle turning of the wheel. These refer to the three turnings of the wheel, three cycles of teaching the Shakyamuni taught. And is connected with the deliberate behavior practice in Vajrayana. The deliberate behavior practice in Vajrayana is a whole set of practices, various gradations, in which you would deliberately engage situations to see how solid your meditation was. So, for instance, if you were pretty sure about your cultivation of compassion, you go into a bar and you jostle somebody. And when he picked a fight with you and hit you in the face and knocked you to the floor, you'd observe whether any anger came up in you. And if it did, then you went back to your cave. In this practice, you embrace what is undesired. You gather adversity. And you come to understand directly that all demonic manifestations are your own mind. And you know that you and others are equal. Through this, you cut right through the inflation of attachment to a self-image or ego clinging. If you don't understand this teaching this way and use it with the hope of being able to subdue and control demons and just uses two different kinds of words for demons, or you want to become famous and well known so that people will support you with food and other offerings, and you look at what are your own projections as enemies and yell hung hung and pay pay at them, and engage in this kind of contrived behavior, this is the incorrect practice of Chö. This is a huge mistake. So right from the beginning, make sure that you practice this the right way. As Congtrul says, this is not about gaining power. It's not about developing sorcery abilities. It's not about being able to heal people. It's about cutting through what causes disturbance. And the method, Chö actually combines a number of different methods. And they're all based on the fusion of emptiness and compassion. Chö is a dramatization of what takes place internally when you are awake and present. So by acting out this drama, what you do with the bell and the drum and everything, and by acting this drama out, you create the propensity within yourself, and you speak directly to the intuitive faculties, if you wish, so that when you encounter situations which cause disturbance, what you've trained to do in Chö just happens. Now, when you're deeply trained in the Dharma, something happens in life, something unexpected, somebody insults you, or it doesn't matter what. When you're deeply trained, the occurrence of a stimulus triggers an openness in mind, and you just go open. And in that openness, you experience what is arising. Anger coming at you, say. Now, the ordinary reaction so anger coming at you is you push it away, and now you have a conflict. And what happens is when anger comes at us, it triggers, it resonates with anger inside us, so that anger comes up. But rather than experiencing that anger, we either suppress it and it goes into the body, or we express it, whereas where we push it away and we go into conflict. But when you're trained You go into that openness, the anger arises, and you don't react to it. And you don't suppress it. You give it all the attention that it needs. In other words, you experience it completely. What happens then? It subsides, it releases itself, and you return to open awareness. That is what is actually being dramatized, whether it's fear, neediness, greed, pride, jealousy, all of these demons representing all of these different emotional reactions. You summon them. And you first identify with the openness of the perfection of wisdom, emptiness. Then you invite it all in and you give it whatever it needs. What does it need most? Or what are we most attached to? What is the one thing we're most attached to? Our body. So we give it our body. All of these things. And they're happy. They cease to cause any trouble. And that's it. Now to do this, we have a little bit of fear, unease, discomfort to deal with, and that's what the practice cuts through. Cuts through all of these self-protecting mechanisms so that we can be completely open and present with what we experience.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.